Good Gabs, sponsored by SkillSkin, a nonprofit organization empowering individuals with disabilities through employment. I'm kind of laughing at myself today because, you know, for a long time we've been introducing guests and I'm like, maybe you don't even know who's coming on, but of course you do because you hit play. You know who's here today. It's Daryl Bryant. But what you might not know is that, you know, he's a board member of the Respiratory Care Society of Washington and a founding member of the Washington Respiratory Care Foundation and just a personal friend of mine. And we're going to have a great conversation today. Daryl, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me here, Steve. Appreciate the invitation.
It's so good to see you, Daryl. It's always a pleasure. Yeah. We get to run into each other all the time. Those of our audience members, they might not know, but I know this guy. Yeah, we're class of 2020, Leadership Spokane. Yeah. Just a good dude and here to talk to us about some, amazing change that's happening up at St. Luke's. So, yeah, what's happening?
Here today to talk about the Respiratory Care Foundation and the Respiratory Care Society of Washington. So, but at St. Luke's, we are expanding and opening a sleep lab. It's one of the biggest projects that I've been involved with, and it's just been crazy, man.
Yeah, I bet. When you start with an idea, but to bring it to fruition takes a lot of things going right.
Yeah, you wouldn't believe. I was blown away by the number of people that have been involved from top to bottom, and it's just been crazy. So we're 17 days out. We're good.
Here we go.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like that's how you do it, because we're talking about the foundation too. Same thing. A lot of things got to go right.
Yeah.
So tell us more about that.
So about 10 years ago, the Respiratory Care Society of Washington stepped up and said, hey, we need a foundation to help support students and education and get some philanthropy within the respiratory care community in Washington State. And so about 5-6 years ago, one of our longtime members and a respiratory therapist, when he passed away, in his will, he donated a large amount of money to the society so that we could start a foundation.
Wow, like he seeded it.
Mm-hmm, yeah. So that seed money, the foundation was required to match, or the Respiratory Care Society was required to match those funds. And we've done that. We're just about there. And we spent the last year and a half putting together all the foundation. So we just are in the process of approving the bylaws this month. And then at our conference in April over in Seattle, we're going to announce that the foundation is fully complete.
Wow. Congratulations. So, what a lift.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so you talked about helping students, like bringing people into the field. Yeah, what's the big grand vision here?
The grand vision is right now it costs about $35,000 for a bachelor's degree in respiratory therapy.
Dang,
in the state of Washington.
That's expensive.
That's some serious money. So the Respiratory Care Society over the last 10 years has had to cut back the amount of money that they've put into their scholarships. So I think last year we only gave out $3,000 in scholarships.
That's not a lot.
And it's not a lot.
And so like this is like RT programs, like community colleges of Spokane, they still doing it?
So Spokane, So SCC actually, they transitioned to a bachelor's degree program about 2 years ago. So they're one of the only community colleges in the country that actually has a bachelor's for respiratory.
So that's a great partnership of helping people come out of that program.
It is,
ready for the job.
Absolutely, yep. Yeah, and there's, I think there's only 5 schools in all of Washington, and SCC is the only respiratory school in this region. So all the rest are on the west side. So
wild.
Yeah, it is. They only graduate about 20 to 25 a year.
So yeah, you're going to be helping the new generation of therapists come into this field.
Yeah.
Why should they come into the field?
Man, it's been a passion of mine my whole life, man. I started when I was in high school. My mom worked in a hospital. And I said, I want to help.
What part of the world was this?
We were in Hawaii.
Okay.
So I graduated from high school in Hawaii. Dad was in the military. So I went, my mom said, hey, I said, I want to help people. I think medical field is where I want to go. And she said, let's have you go to the hospital and meet some of the different people that work in different areas. So I went in and I met with lab. She was a lab tech. I met with lab, went to the respiratory therapy department, went to radiology, nursing. And there was one theme is that, you know, you don't want to be a nurse. I was like, nah, I'm not sure I want to be wiping butts my whole life. So, and then, so as I'm talking and I'm sitting in the respiratory department, they're doing all this cool stuff. They're doing PFTs and they're doing blood gases and they're talking about all that great stuff that they do. And then, I was like, that's what I want to do, man.
It sparked something.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, I actually joined the military. And went into the respiratory program in the military.
What branch?
So Army.
Okay.
So they have a great, at the time it was the only respiratory program in the military. All of the, any respiratory from any of the other branches, they had to come to us to do their program. So was in San Antonio, great program. So I couldn't beat it. I didn't have any money for college. And so at this time they're like, hey, we're gonna feed you, clothe you, give you housing for 2 years and let you create a career for yourself.
Like, sign me up.
And I was like, dude, this is cool, man. So yeah, when they, when the recruiter approached me and said, here, pick any job you want because your scores on your ASVAB were high enough that you can just choose what you want. I was like, this is what I want to do. And it looks cool. So, I was scared because I'd never actually worked in a hospital. I'd never had anything to do with it. And, the very first day of orientation, almost passed out because they were intubating. They were nasally intubating a guy in the room that we were in. And my instructor grabbed me and pulled me aside. He said, you need to go take a breath because I almost passed out.
Dude, I understand that. Like, I don't know. I don't know if our listeners know, but I used to be like a salesman, sold medical devices and sold some, ventilators too, little portable ones. But I was over at Kootenai County Hospital. This guy named Rich White was running that department at the time. He's like, hey, you want to see what these things really do?
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh yeah, sure. Saw my first intubation. I'm like, I can't even say that today, but it was shocking.
Yeah, I know, Rich.
Like, I was like, whoa.
Yeah, I know, Rich.
So I feel you.
Yeah. So,
but you kept going. I ran the other way. Nah, I'm like, man, I kept going. I don't want to deal with this.
I was like, I'm all in. I'll get it figured out. So, it was a good time for me. A year and a half in San Antonio, that's where I met my wife. So, I mean, it's one of those things, everything happens for a reason. So I stayed, I met her. And then, so I've spent the last 34 years in the field and it's been a passion. I've loved every minute of it. I've worked, in the NICU, I worked with, you know, babies that were small enough to fit in my hand. And I've worked with, adults that were, you know, 100 years old. I've seen the best and the worst of, healthcare. So it's been a journey.
I can imagine. So.
Yeah.
Well, just in the field itself, even the last, you know, 4 years, you know, coming out of COVID, like y'all were front line in that.
Yeah. And I tell people all the time, dude, it took a pandemic for people to actually recognize respiratory therapists. I'm like, we walk around the hospital my entire career. It's like, hey, RT, hey, RT. I'm like, hey, I got a name, you know, but now it's like, hey, Daryl, can you help me out?
Well, that's interesting.
Like, yeah. It is. It was something that, it was a switch. It was really a flip. And if you go to most hospitals now, it's most of the nursing staff, most of the patients even recognize the respiratory therapist. So, I mean, even patients had called us nurses or, you know, assistants, and it was different. And then about the time COVID hit, everyone was like, oh, respiratory therapist.
They got to see it. 'Cause this is science.
Yeah.
A little bit of, I call it magic. I bet you have a different word, but it's that feel, that experience, like knowing somebody's body, what's happening.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Beautiful.
And most people don't know, like respiratory therapists, we look at the entire body, even though we focus mostly on cardiopulmonary stuff, but we have to look at the whole body because it all affects respiratory and cardiac. So it's a big thing. You know, and then the whole DeMar Hamlin thing, that really brought to light the value of respiratory therapists on a team.
So for our listeners that don't know, maybe explain that a little bit.
So he was a, he's a football player for the Buffalo Bills, and he went down on the field, and the medical team arrived immediately, and the number one person on scene was the respiratory therapist. Helped stabilize him. They did CPR on him. And so from that point on, you've got, you know, you've got COVID leading into that. And this happened, what, just 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago. So the amount of exposure that we've had in the last 5 years has been huge. And Damar Hamlin's another one that is just another story where you just go, respiratory therapists are making their name out there.
Heck yeah. So, that's awesome. Well, what's kept you going?
I have, there's my why. So, throughout my career, I've had little moments where I have just those aha moments where I go, that's why I do what I do, you know? And then about 6 years ago, when I took this job at St. Luke's, I left a hospital over in Post Falls, came to St. Luke's, and, it was actually my second day there, and I was on the elevator, and I was standing there minding my own business, and this woman walks on, and she's got a baby on her hip, and she looks at me and she goes, I know you. And the first thing I thought was, I know that's not my baby, so let's let's have a conversation about this. I said, I don't recognize you, but you got to tell me, how do I know you? She goes, and this is just like, I get choked up every time I say it. She said, you saved my life. I said, okay, you have to tell me more. I said, because I've been around, I've done a lot. She said, when my baby was born, I got septic and I wound up in the hospital and was on a ventilator. And they couldn't get me off the ventilator. So they shipped her to the long-term acute care hospital in Post Falls. And, she was on the ventilator, and she said, every day you came in there and you inspired me to get up. She said, I was done. I wanted to quit. She was one of those. She was one of those. She'd been through so much. She was hurting so bad. She just didn't see an end to it. And she wanted to give up. And so the very first day I was in there, I was like, look, I said, you have a brand new baby. I said, you've got a long life ahead of you. I've seen people sick like this. Let's work on this. And so she said, you saved my life. You gave me that inspiration every day you came in there and inspired me to get up, get me off the ventilator. And so here I am, like less than a year later, and she's walking, talking, she's got her baby on her hip, and she's got a good life. So that's why I do what I do, brother. It's a beautiful thing. So I have put together a presentation that I'm going to start giving to respiratory therapists, because they need to know, you may not ever have that person standing there in front of you talking to you. I mean, the odds of me running into somebody that I took care of in a totally different city at a totally different hospital, it was like,
and that remembers your face.
Exactly. Yeah. So it was like, it was huge. And, so I tell people, I said, that's why we do what we do. You may not ever see that person. You may not ever feel that person. But in that moment, I was like, every respiratory therapist needs to feel this. They need to understand that what they do is important. Even though, even if you just spend 10 minutes a day with that person, you're making a difference.
Because that story does exist. They just might not ever hear it. And it's not onesie twosies. Right. Like over the course of a career, there's many people who probably had that feeling towards their therapist. Yeah.
So what put all this in my brain is, so I read a book years ago. It's called The Five People You Meet in Heaven. If you've never read it, you really should read it.
Heard it here.
It's great. So basically the story is after he dies, five people that he interacted with, came in contact with, that he didn't really remember in his life, they basically show up and tell him how he affected their lives. And so when this happened to me, I connected the two and I was like, that's a story. That's, you have to tell that story. So that's where I'm at.
So this is the next evolution, huh? You're going to start inspiring the young RTs.
Yeah.
What's the work like at the Washington Therapist, you know, association level? Yep. What are you doing with them? How'd you get involved?
So the RCSW, when I took the manager's position at St. Luke's, a really good friend of mine that I've known for years, he reached out and he said, hey, we need some good board members for the RCSW. He said, I think you fit in really well. So, at first starting a new job, moving to a new job, moving from Idaho to Washington. It was at the time I was like, no, I can't do it. I've just got too much. Give me a little bit. So about a year later, he reached out again and he said, hey, it's time. Yeah. He's like, we still got an opening. Come on, let's go. So I did. So I put my hat in the ring for board of directors position. So I jumped on board there. Great group of people. Our job is to help respiratory therapists. We advocate for them at the state and national level. We're very instrumental in helping to move new laws forward. I think a year and a half ago, we got one at the state level that was a scope of practice. It helped us clarify our scope of practice and helped us expand what we do within the hospital and give us legitimacy in doing those things. Everything from...
Awesome. So people, what, you were doing stuff kind of... part of the job maybe, or
yeah, somewhat. I mean, and it's stuff that we've always done, but it's like your scope of practice doesn't cover that. So some hospitals would, you know, they would write policies and said it's okay to do it. Others were like, no, you can't do it because it's not within your scope. So at the state level, we were like, well, we need to change that. So but it was
it fixed.
Yeah, we did. It was a much bigger bill. There's a lot more to it, but it was something huge. And then we're also working with the national organization, the AARC, to work on things like telehealth for respiratory therapy. So,
what would that look like?
Just being able to assess a patient from, you know, long distance, you know, having a respiratory therapist. They have nurses that do it all the time.
Yeah, they do. Know? I've used them.
Yeah. Yeah. So we've said, hey, if nurses can do it, why can't we, you know?
Can you expand on that just a little? Because I'm personally curious.
Yeah.
Like, well, so maybe this is like someone who's using like a home vent or like.
So
what, give me a scenario.
Just a. So you got a patient that takes breathing treatments at home.
There you go.
Okay. So they have COPD, you know, chronic lung disease, and they're at home and they're like, I don't feel good. I'm having trouble breathing. I'm having trouble with my oxygen. So they, you know, they log into the portal and they talk to a respiratory therapist, and the respiratory therapist helps assess them. What's your oxygen level at? What's your O2 sat right now? How's your breathing? Do you feel like you're wheezing? Do you need another breathing treatment? When was your last treatment? So we can assess them in those ways.
And then we can even hear them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And you can see their face. You can hear them. You know, are they able to speak full sentences? Are they having trouble getting their breath? You know, you can do that assessment quick and make a decision. Do they need to go to the hospital? Do they need to contact a doctor? Or do they just need another breathing treatment?
And there's millions of people on breathing treatments across this country.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And in the rural areas too, and it's hard to get to people. Like, this really expands access.
Absolutely. So yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. So when I was doing my, I did a paper when I was doing my bachelor's degree 2 years ago. And, that was one of them, was, rural access to, pulmonary rehab. But also it directly interacts with the respiratory therapist, because they don't, oftentimes these really rural areas, they have access to a respiratory therapist when they're in the hospital, but that's it. So, we have a skill set that's very specialized, and we do a lot of stuff, and we have a lot more knowledge than most people will ever understand. So I've had nurses look at me and go, how do you know that? I'm like,
years, like how years. You know your right. thing.
Exactly. Yeah. But the thing is that it's their thing they're asking me about.
That's even more interesting.
Exactly. Yeah. So, I had an event in an ER one time, and when it was completely over, the nurses were trying to work on their charting, and they're like, I can't remember any of this stuff. And I start rattling off all the stuff that they did on top of what I did. And they're like, how do you know that? I'm like, I watch, I learn, and I know. It's part of my job. It's part of my skill set, you know? So, and I always tell
that's what we bring to the table as RTs. We're seeing it all. It's holistic.
That's what most people don't understand, is we're sitting at the head of the bed, but we can see the whole room. You know, you have a nurse that's standing there staring at the patient, trying to get an IV, but we're at the head of the bed. I've got a patient that's intubated. I'm bagging them, but I'm watching what the nurse is doing, what the doctor's doing. I'm listening to what meds they're giving, because I know how that affects my patient's cardiac and respiratory status. So it's huge. And I tell RTs all the time, if you don't know what the other people are doing in the room, then you don't know.
Huh. So, fair enough. Yeah. Well, okay. Well, speaking of that, I mean, if you're seeing everything, you're seeing everything.
Yeah.
So what's like self-care look like to have a 34-year career? To like, what do you got to do to just make sure that you're taking care of yourself?
Yeah. So there are times when we, just like anyone, the stresses of life get to you. So for me, it's, I have to disconnect from work completely. So when I was a very young respiratory therapist, my very first event was, I worked at a children's hospital. Had my first actual death was a baby that came in. It was a SIDS baby. You know, mom came in carrying the baby. Baby's dead. I mean, just obviously. So I went home. I was devastated. I mean, I'm 20 years old, first baby I've ever seen die. And so I'm talking to my dad. My dad was he was in the Army, and he did 3 tours in Vietnam. And he said, you have to find a way to disconnect that part of it. He said, you have to find a way to compartmentalize it so that it doesn't affect you mentally and emotionally, but you still have to talk about it. So over the years, I found ways to, when I walk out the door from work, I leave work at work. So there's some emotion that still lingers, but I've had a good support system. My wife, I talked to her about a lot of stuff. I've had friends that I talked to about a lot of stuff. And then I found things that help me to completely disconnect from all of that stuff. So right now it's video games. So like if I have downtime and I need to decompress, I'll just log in and I have a group of friends online from all over the world that I play video games with.
Yeah, it just takes you to another space.
Yeah, it takes me to another place.
That's incredible that your dad gave you that advice so young. Yeah. I wonder, you know, I imagine as time goes on, humans, we're getting better at talking about this stuff. So just in the RT world in general, I mean, is that addressed in school? And or is it kind of one of the,
It is now. So it's not something that was ever addressed, but now it's required in most of the programs. And once you get into a job, there's a lot of resources. Like at my job, there's a lot of resources for the mental and emotional support. So as a manager, I pass those on to my RTs. I'm like, okay, if you even feel stressed a little bit, you need to reach out to somebody. If you don't have a person that you can talk to about it, then we have counselors. There's a lot of free resources, and then there's, you know, other resources that are covered by your insurance, but you need to find that. So I mentor a couple of nursing leaders, and I've told them the same thing. I said, you need to have that person that you can talk to about work, about what's affecting you, how it's affecting you, and be able to let go of that eventually. So I give that same advice to all my RTs.
Sage advice, man. Yeah. It's incredible. Yeah. Well, what is kind of like that vision of the, you know, I want to go back to the foundation a little bit, because we kind of danced around a little bit about what you're going to be working on, but what's that big thing? Like, where do you want to make that impact outside of just, you know, supporting kids or not kids, but people entering in the workforce?
It's twofold. So the foundation, supporting them in their education, but helping to decrease the financial burden on as many students as we can. And then at the same time, bringing them in and exposing them to the RCSW. So getting them involved in the respiratory community. And we're such a small community, you know.
Yeah, you were saying off camera, like 3,000 people?
Yeah, there's only just over 3,000 licensed respiratory therapists in the state of Washington. And over 1,000 of those are out of state. So some live in Idaho, Oregon, so the bordering states, but then you also have travelers that come in, they have to get out of state licenses. But but only about 27% of all RTs are members of the RCSW. So that's a very small number when you think about it. So we want to drive people into the RCSW because that's where we get our support. That's how you get... the more members you have, the more ability you have to have a say at the state level.
Yeah.
And then we're also helping to grow the national organization so that we can have more of a say at the national level. So we are one of the most well-off and best-run organizations for respiratory care, state organizations in the country.
Well, I believe that, especially with you part of it, man. Yeah.
It's good stuff, man.
Well, I got to say, it's always nice to be talking to friends. Yeah. That's for sure. And Daryl's that. Like, yeah. Daryl, anything else? Any parting thoughts for our guests today? Or excuse me, our listeners? But you might be our guest. I don't know.
Might be. Yeah, who knows? It's just like they're sitting here in the living room with us.
You watching.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, just supporting the foundation. That's how we're going to grow, and that's how we're going to be able to make a difference in the respiratory community and the community in general. The better funded the foundation is, the better we can support education, not only to the community, but to the respiratory therapists. So there's a lot of crossover between the RCSW and the foundation itself. A lot of the founding board members came from the RCSW, and I still sit on both boards. So most of us either sit on the board or we support both in one way or another. So it's as you go through your day, if you think about it, making a donation to the foundation is something huge. And you can go to our website. It's warcf.org.
Easy.
Yeah, buddy.
You heard it here. This speaks to you. Yeah. Get involved. Daryl, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, brother. I appreciate you having me.